Hello, everybody. Welcome to Optional Opinion, part of the Anomalous Radio Network. I'm your host, Eddie V. Thank you guys for tuning in and checking me out. Today's topic, I'm going to be talking about valuing games. Now, I'm not talking about the way that you value games as in money or anything like that, but something that you hold dear and close to you, something that you have more of an appreciation to. 2 weeks ago, I did a week about valuing games on IGN on part of my Optional Opinion blog. I'll give you guys more details about that later on in the show. And it goes a little bit something like this. I've been a gamer since 1985. I played countless games and had great and terrible moments with them. Loving worlds that would go beyond your expectations with control that were fluid or stiff. Even now, I enjoy a ton of games that come from indies, third party, and some of the first party developers. There are things in that particular genre or franchise that make me talk, write, podcast, such as right now, and cherish in a lot of video games. I tend to find myself unhappy at times because some of the modern games that don't try to reach a new level of excitement and interest. It may be me, or it may be that value I thought the game would have. We all have a fondness for each game we see or play. Sometimes we see the loss of value in that game because of various reasons. Now, most of the time, we have to see if certain companies will have a functioning game when it's released instead of purchase. Some of them that are released on Steam that are indies seem to be waiting for the review or podcast. Metacritic can even add to the equation of the game's value. I, myself, value a game by many points. From music, impact of story and character, discussions with others to get their point of view of the game, and other factors. The emotions that connect with players from retro memories to new memories created at moments when people are playing a game at that same time. From the therapeutic game time to understanding what makes a game downright maddening to those who don't understand. And the reason why I just read the blog, just the introduction to it of why I was going to be talking about things of that week is that me and my friend was talking about certain games that we love, like the Mass Effect series and the Kingdom Hearts series, you know. And it made me kind of reminisce to the days of getting games like Super Mario Brothers 2 and Mario 3, playing Contra, Double Dribble, having that bonding time with my brother playing, Joe Montana Football 1 and 2. It was just those things that created some kind of value and memory for those games that made me really appreciate and love the games that I played. Now, I'm not saying that now that I don't feel impressed, but there just are some modern games that I don't feel connected to, that I don't feel like have, don't want to say it don't have a soul, but it's just something that I kind of just don't value. And it's not a bad thing or anything like that. I feel that when you get a game, if it doesn't feel like you need to trade it in to get an upgrade, you know, that's when you kind of know that a game does have value to it. For me, definitely, as I read in the blog and stuff, from the music to the stories, sorry about that, to the story, to the characters and the worlds of if they make me laugh or if they make me drop my jaw or it makes me feel like, you know, what I'm doing in the world in that game really matters. I hold very dear to that. I know I talk about games like Streets of Rage and games like Secret of Mana and Chrono Trigger, why those games has value to me. It's because they all, those three things do something different that makes me feel happy and very cherishable about those games. Like, I can't turn them in and or just be like, oh, it was this, and it was that. It's something about the music. It's something about the characters. It's something about the gameplay, the storyline. You know, it's just something that connects to me, and I pretty much value it. So, that's why I made this episode about valuing games. But before we go with that, we're going to be talking about Touching the Soul after this music break. At the age of 7, I felt a huge accomplishment jumping on top of the flag in Super Mario Brothers. I played arcade games and had an Atari, but nothing like the NES and its fantastic games. I never needed a help as a kid on games, but it was always fun playing a co-op game with my brother, cousins, and friends. Those moments of laughing and enjoying our playtime together touched me dearly, because as time went on and we grew up, those times faded away. When a game touches you, whether it makes you cry, connected, or smile, you see the value that games and these different franchises have provided for you. It's not always monetary. Games just don't have to have a trade-in value or an eBay value to collectors. That value doesn't touch the soul in the sense that it's deeper in meaning. You can have something rare and the value of your collection may impress people, but there aren't stories connected to games if you haven't played them or you just wanted that copy so you could flip it for profit. And the reason why I wrote about touching the soul was that something... Sorry about that. Something like playing, like I mentioned earlier, Joe Montana with my brother. And I kind of talked about this on older episodes. Is that that was our bonding time together. Because as kids, even though I have a older brother and an older sister, you know, with certain kids, you sometimes want to find your own friends and your own space. And, you know, as you grow older and you as the younger person at a different age, sometimes there's just different interests. And not everything is going to be like, I want to do what my brother does. I want to do what my sister does and stuff like that. Everybody has their own space and their own favorite things that they like to do. But that video game time that I spend with my family and with my cousins, like I said earlier, it really meant something to me. So, and then sometimes, like, when I see a game, it brings all these memories back that make me feel like, yeah, I remember we played Contra over our grandma's house. And it creates stories that we play. You know, one of the favorite stories that touched me was actually beating my brother at Joe Montana for the Sega Genesis, the first one. Now, I'm not a big sports person. I can completely admit that. But I love games playing like NBA Jam. I had that game with my brother. We rented it at Blockbuster and spent like hours and hours playing it on the Super Nintendo. Double Dribble, Tecmo Bowl, you know, I started playing sports games, with my brother on there. And he's great at sports. He loves sports. He used to play football. And he's, you know, he's into sports. And he's always been good at sports games. Me, on the other hand, I've been good at everything else. Platformers, actions, adventures, shooter, you know, just different types of games that he wasn't able to play. The memory that I have that touched me was the fact that I actually beat my brother at Joe Montana, like I said earlier. And every time I played him, because he wanted to always play with somebody, I was always not the scapegoat, but I was the chosen one to play him. And I remember I'm a person that loves doing long passes, because, you know, I feel like I don't have no advancement if I don't throw the ball and have my player catch it. And I would get intercepted, my stuff, I would get, you know, stopped, my brother would rob me, and it got to a point where somehow, you know, I just started playing, getting a little bit better, just not knowing what I was doing, but, you know, just trying my best. And get in that, and somehow I end up tying the game, and we went into overtime. So of course, in Joe Montana's dad, whoever gets the first point, even in real life football, whoever gets the first touchdown, wins the game. And my brother ended up getting the ball, and somehow I stopped it, because he thought it was going to be an easy win. And he's playing, his 49ers, and I'm playing, I think the Raiders at that time. I wasn't into a football team at that time. I want to say Green Bay, but I think I had the Raiders, because my brother, he used to like the Raiders, and then he went to San Francisco. And so whatever team that I had, I'm gonna say the Raiders. I end up stopping him for, you know, his four tries, and I end up getting the ball. And I remember just picking this pass, don't know what it was, and I'm not making this up or anything. I want to say Hail Mary, but I don't think that was the one. I remember, you know, I'm at the 20-yard line, and I got to get way to the other side. So I, you know, hike the ball to the quarterback. I fall back, and I throw the ball to the right. And it was weird with Joe Montana. There was when you got onto your spot, it used to be like a yellow target. And you know how you, anyone who played darts, you kind of have that targeting system. Or even when you're, you know, at a gun range, you got that circle targeting system that kind of, even, it kind of looks like target's symbol. You know, the place target. It looks like that symbol. And the spot that it showed you where you need to be at to catch the ball was yellow. And depending on what team you were would be the color underneath you. So I'm running, getting to the spot, and I get somewhere into the yellow, and my brother is close to me. Somehow I catch the ball and I start jetting it up the field. Now the game is vertical, so it's not horizontal or anything. The game is straight over the top vertical style, and I'm running, and my brother is trying to get me. He missed me at when I got the ball. He keeps, you know, his computer opponents, and he's selecting them. He's still trying to get me, and just when he almost had me, I crossed the touchdown line, and I yelled, "Yay, I won!" And it was so amazing. I had finally defeated my brother in the game. We spent 45 minutes playing that game. And he beat me countless of times, in Joe Montana. And when I finally won, I felt so happy and so good that I overcame my brother in a sports game. Now, I told him, there's no comebacks. I'm not doing it again. I got my win. That's all I needed. And that's all that's going to stay. And even after he stopped playing Joe Montana, Joe Montana Football 2 came out. So we was playing that, and he said, "Okay, that win that you got in part 1, I'll let you have it. But let me get this. Let's see if you can get another win in this game. If you can't, and you gotta admit defeat." And I was just like, "Okay." So we played it, and because now it was horizontal, and it was still a fun game, but it wasn't just my cup of tea or something. I never beat him in Joe Montana 2, but it was so touching, just that moment of defeat for my brother. I couldn't believe that, you know, having something like that. So now every time I see Joe Montana Football, I talk about how I defeated him in that game. Now, it's actually been a really long time that that I played any kind of sports games. My friends, he used to dominate me at Madden, and to this very day, if I play him, he will. Me and my other friend, we played NFL Blitz at the arcade, and I got the victory. I actually beat him. But then next time we played, he started beating me. And we recently, a few months ago, last year, actually went to Galloping Ghost to play the game, and I beat my one friend, but not the one that I beat earlier. Got really good at the game, and he just died. I think I only made like 6 points until he had like 56 points. He just dominated me, and I was just like, "Oh!" But the moment of playing that game really touched, getting to that competitive spirit, but getting to the fact that, wow, you know, playing this game with you, co-op, is making me laugh, and I'm enjoying this time. So now that every time we see the machine, yeah, he hints that he wants to play, I'll go for it. And I'll say, "You know what? I have a 50-50 chance of winning and losing. And it's games like that that I value most. The games that really touch the soul. And I talked about people who have friends that have moved, like who like were in the Navy or in the Army, their kids who move around in the military who move around. If you go over their house and you guys game a lot, hang out a lot, you know, and back in that day, we didn't really have like Facebook and Twitter and Skype and things like that. You know, there were still letters, there were still phone calls and things like that. And then when you just lose contact with them, it's kind of hard picking up a game that you played co-op with, and you're missing that friend. It brings memories of you missing that friend. And still today, even with online, definitely with Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony, and with PC, with games being more online focused, you can still connect and you can still, you know, voice chat and still have that talk with friends that's way around the country. Or, you know, people who are still in the neighborhood, but, you know, it's too late to go hang out with or do anything. You might be out popping the game. You guys might talk to each other, doing voice chat, playing like Destiny or something like that. You know, creating that those memories and stuff and letting that sink in and touch your soul. You know, definitely with people who have lost their job, or people who are dealing with a disease, or people who have actually died. Sometimes there are games that are therapeutic, and you know, it's touching to you because it might be a story or a character that's going through something that comes out of overcome that you somehow experience, and you will always think and remember. Just be like, wow, yeah, Gears of War might be too much, but it might actually do something for somebody. You never know. It might help them, you know, release anger, and make them feel like they're a better person. It's nothing like saving the world in a video game. Regardless of you're saving a princess, if you're going to a role-playing game, and that's just something that's, it feels very cliche and things of that nature. But it's always a good feeling to do something like that. It's always something about a video game that touches you, that makes you want to talk to others, that makes you want to come to the realize that there are real world problems. And this might, sorry about that, this might help you solve them, or it might just help you, you know, be able to think about them, and give you a way to do more research and get more educated about those kind of issues. Yeah, it's very high fantasy. There's a lot of things in cutscenes and stuff, and sometimes in stories that's so laughable and things that would never happen or be true. But you know what? It might do you some good. You know, regardless of what you think of the Call of Duty series, or even back in the day, the Medal of Honor series, or even Assassin's Creed, if there's something, yeah, it's going to be violent, but if it's something that's meaningful to you, that makes you feel like as a soldier or as a protagonist that you're doing this for the greater good, and that good makes you feel, you know, on top of the world, makes you feel powerful. It's a really, it shouldn't be taken too serious, or it should be played out as a fantasy in the world, you know, things like that. It's a different touch in the soul and a different kind of value. But definitely for me, like I said, just having that game, and just playing with my brother and stuff, really touched my soul. And that's why I say John Madden is a game that I really value and things of like things of that nature. Even Final Fantasy VII, when I seen Ezreal, I was just like, no! But if anyone haven't played it, I do recommend it. It's on PSN, and you can play it on PS Vita, to really play Final Fantasy VII. And it's just, the story might seem cuckoo, but the characters are really great. So, and on our next topic, our next part of the show, do retro games hold value over modern games? I'll let you guys know that after our music break. Mm-hmm. So, do retro games have more value over modern games? Well, this one is really debatable. So many 8-bit, 16-bit, and some 32-bit Atari and older PC games have so much value to a lot of older gamers who have a great selection of games from that era compared to the games from PS2 to now. Since a lot of retro titles have paved the way for a lot of designers to become beloved and respected people in the video game industry, we tend to see some of the influence from those games put into today's games. Where games that have a Metroidvania feel to them, some of those who haven't played the original Metro or Castlevania, Metroid and Castlevania 2, may not see the genius of those games. Some of the modern gamers probably haven't tried games on Virtual Console or PlayStation Network or even some of the Game Boy titles on the 3DS. They may laugh or be put off if they try Zombies Ain't My Neighbors and want to shoot zombies in any modern game that has them. Where some of us enjoy or quite be finished shooting another zombie with cliche scares, we may enjoy kicking them playing Michael Jackson Moonwalker on the Sega Genesis. And the reason why I say it's more debatable about this, like I stated earlier, because of a lot of the retro games, you know, a lot of those libraries and games, you know, we could make top 100 lists of them. Where probably we could still do the list of modern games, like I said, from PS2 until now. We probably still can make a top 100 list. But I don't think there's going to be any difference in them. Meaning that, you know, there's going to be probably a lot of shooters. And it's going to probably be a whole bunch of the Grand Theft Auto games, like the open world games. It's going to contain some Nintendo games that we can't deny or anything like that. You know, Nintendo alone, Nintendo alone probably could have their own top 100 plus, ranked games. And there's been people who have done 100 games from Nintendo or 50 games plus from Nintendo, alone. But if you think about it, I think because of the era that we're in, is that a lot of people will find, you know, modern games easier to play than games back in the retro. Of course, if you look at the reacts and you see the teens play Mega Man or Punch Out compared to teens playing The Last of Us or Call of Duty, and you know, some of the elder people playing Grand Theft Auto 5, you could kind of see the gap. You could see the difference of them, where they could boast, like some of the kids and some of the gamers today could boast about, you know, what they could do in modern games now, and a lot of us older gamers are like, look where we have come from these retro games. You know, we love that these genres evolve so we don't have to deal with that. But it's always fun to go back and play the games that started the foundations. So, you know, those foundational games may have more value than modern games. I personally think that we need both. I think retro games don't hold any value over modern games. It may seem that way and it may sound that way, but I think whatever ever that you grew up with games, whatever games that you play, whether you are a gamer now and you go back and play some of the old classic games, you might have a love and a fond for those foundational games. And you might be like, wow, you know, playing Mega Man 1 and then playing, you know, Grand Theft Auto now, you'd be like, wow, even though those two are separate games, you know, I have an enjoyment of both. And, you know, if each game makes me want to continue to play and get better, and make me feel like I'm, like, if you play a really hard game from the NES days and you beat it, you feel a great accomplishment compared to where you play a modern game right now and it kind of eases you into the game and, you know, it's very linear and you know, you've been doing the same thing kind of over and over, and you get to the point where you're just happy that you're ready to beat it because there's too much redundancy. You can state the problems and stuff, but if the Mega Man game made you feel more accomplished because you beat that game without no expectations, where you just really want to rush through a game to get an ending, you will kind of see where the value is in that game. Now, I don't want to say that, sorry about that. I don't want to say something like, Grand Theft Auto doesn't have value, because I think Grand Theft Auto 3 kind of changed a lot of the 3D open world gameplay in the crime department. If people like to do, you know, be able to be given a world and have the freedom to do anything, you know, those kind of open world games, the freedom in those games is what you probably value the most than maybe the game itself. And for me personally, I find that, you know, that's cool for a lot of people. For me personally, it is cool that you could go around and do stuff like that, but I feel like the mission structure is what I'm going to value most, and the story structure is going to value most. Like, and I talked about this, like, I hold Sleeping Dogs and now it's like Saints Row 3, I hold those games really high in standard. I will say Grand Theft Auto 3 is held in a high standard also, that I value that game. Compared to some of the retro games, you know, they kind of have an equal thing where, you know, something like Secret of Mana might equals like Sleeping Dogs. You know, it kind of have that love and that respect. And I value both of them. Where Secret of Mana is very retro, Sleeping Dogs is very modern. You know, playing those games, I continue to enjoy them. And with, like, I look forward to the progress that I'm making. And when I finally beat it and see the ending, I feel very accomplished at both games. Like, Secret of Mana, I always recommend people who haven't played it to play it. Sleeping Dogs, people who haven't, you know, played that game, but like open world games, to really give that a try. Like, and I dog Grand Theft Auto 5 because of so many errors. And I just feel like it's a game not put well together. Some people do love Grand Theft Auto 5. So some people Game of the Year, and that's cool, and I respect that. But when I felt like when I played Sleeping Dogs, I could see the difference in Grand Theft Auto 5. Same as if I play Secret of Mana and then Earthbound. I'm not saying Earthbound is a bad game. No, I have been starting playing Earthbound and just amazed. You know, I've actually told my friends, just like, why did I not buy this game when I was a kid and I was able to play it? But now he said I was rectifying it, which is good because I am rectifying it. But I'm using that example is because that I kind of hold Secret of Mana at a higher standard because I played it so much and I love it. And it's very close to me, where Earthbound, I've never played it until now. And my mouth is dropped and just be like, okay, I can see that these are two different games. And definitely with the playstyle, I have never been a person that had that Phantasy Star, that Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior when it was earlier, and that Earthbound, like that kind of fighting gameplay, I've never been into. You know, it was just something about that kind of looking at the screen and like kind of in a first person view and doing commands like that way, I have never been a fan of. It didn't actually take me to Dragon Quest Dragon Quest 8 on PS2 for me to really appreciate things like that. I have always, when it came to RPGs, before Final Fantasy and stuff, games like The Legend of Zelda and games like Secret of Mana, those action role-playing games is what I have always been into when it came to role-playing games. I played Final Fantasy 3/6 and I played Chrono Trigger, and I was glad that Chrono Trigger was a cross of that, of those two games, you know, in gameplay. It still has its active time battle, but it felt like kind of an action adventure role playing game. And I appreciate that. Where the first person view stance of a role playing game, and even with some of the active time battles like Final Fantasy 6, 3/6, you know, I didn't get into, besides, Final Fantasy 7 and things like that. And now, I do appreciate Final Fantasy 3/6. I keep saying that. so I don't cause no confusion or no debate with some people. I do enjoy that game now. I'm still trying to make my way through it. I gotta hook up my Wii and go through my virtual console and play that game and finish it. But, you know, those two games are kind of like the sleeping, like I said, the Sleeping Dogs and the Grand Theft Auto. In that sense that, you know, they're both retro games and they're both modern games, and none of them hold any kind of value difference over each other. Definitely for me, you know, I've come to an appreciation. I do, like I said, well, I should say this. I don't really hate Grand Theft Auto 5. I don't want to say I despise it, even though I say it's just a terrible game. It's terrible in a way of the gameplay mechanics that makes the rest of the game frustrating. And if that is like 70% of your game, that's supposed to really make that game work in itself, if that fails, I'm not going to enjoy the rest of the content that you have in the game. And that's how I see Grand Theft Auto 5. Now, I don't want to bag on Grand Theft Auto 5, but that's the viewpoint that I see it from. And, you know, some people can't forgive Rockstar for it, or, you know, they play so many of Rockstar games. You know, why would someone like me or be able to complain or you get upset? And I always say, if you play Max Payne 3 and then you play Grand Theft Auto 5, you could completely see the difference. Like, I hold Max Payne 3 itself at a terrific game. I give it a plus, a 10. You know, a game that I actually really value from Rockstar over Grand Theft Auto 5. You know, so, That's the way that I kind of see. Even though they're both minor games, that one I feel like has more value over Grand Theft Auto 5. But, like I said, depending on the era, and you can make it debatable and stuff, I think they both equal each other out. And I feel like no matter what game that you play, if you value it and you enjoy it, you're always going to see some great things from it. And that's what I really like. Like in games. For some people, they might say retro games do hold value over modern games and give their reason. And like I said, there might be some modern gamers who say that games of today hold value over the earlier games and things like that. So it's like I said, it's very debatable, but a lot of responses that I got from a lot of people who read my blog, kind of said that, you know, we need both and I value both. So, moving on to that, we hold them to a high standard, and I will tell you what that actually means after this music break. Now, this blog that I wrote, I kind of want to read the whole thing, so just bear with me. Not all of Nintendo games get recognized for trying something new when they bring out a new IP or do something different. Certain gamers lost their minds about changes in a patch for Call of Duty Ghosts to make one of the weapons less powerful. We may rag on EA for everything because of their quality of products now than what we now now than what they were in the 90s and the early 2000s. When we hold a product to a high standard, it's because we value these games or companies and show our support to them with our purchases. We could say games like Bayonetta 2 wouldn't be made without Nintendo's help, but so many are thankful that it did get made. Look at the result of that game. Gamers valued it in time where a lot of big games that show promise in trailer form but not in actual execution after its release. If Nintendo released broken game last year, then not only would the Wii U lost more value than it should have, but their future products would come with hesitation and concern. I knew back in the 90s, in the Super NES days, Squaresoft had a reputation for releasing some of the best RPGs on the market. Enix had Dragon Quest and ActRaiser, I believe, at that time. Games that appreciate and love still to this day. There's something that I wrote that there's just games that I still love and appreciate today. Now, if you look at Square Enix, they are slowly getting that love and value back again. We held them to a higher standard when it came to third party because they were the home of console RPGs. The trailers were full of excitement and wonder. Some of their games, not so much. If we look at it, Bravely Default and Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, Tomb Raider, Sleeping Dogs, and luckily Kingdom Hearts have been games that have made us smile and fall in love with them more. Even the Dragon Quest on DS, PS2, and mobile have been excellent titles. In order to keep that value we all cherish from developers and publishers, we have come to the point of rating for reviews. If there is a majority of reviewers who can trust and see if a game has been given a fair treatment, then it could be a go. If not, then buy something else. So it was something like, so the reason why I wrote this piece about, holding up to a high standard is because the quality that we look for brings out the value of that game. That's something that we cannot argue. If the quality is top notch, blows our expectations, it has us coming back for more and more. Even if the sequels are, great, or the franchise just keeps expanding, gets better and better, we look forward to that because we know that when that game comes out, that it's coming from a company that we can trust. That's going to release good products. EA, ooh, sorry about that, could release bomb after bomb after bomb, but they got someone like BioWare who did Dragon Age Inquisition, sorry about that, that got Game of the Year from a lot of websites and from other people. Me, I gave it the Bayonetta 2 last year because I'm still playing that game, and I'm just like, the quality in this is so top notch from Platinum. You can recognize the difference in a Platinum game by itself and some other action games from different companies. The God of War series, of course everybody gonna hold the first one as good, and the second and third ones, they were great games, but they don't have that standard for them. Kind of, not say went downhill, but they kind of lost value because they felt like the games are going through the same motions. Where, Bayonetta 2, you could feel it from Platinum and be like, they're good about action games. And then when you play Bayonetta 2 with some of Nintendo's influence or in the fight, she'd just be like, wow, this is amazing. And even with Super Mario World, sorry about that, I hold games from Nintendo up to a higher standard. And like Super Mario World, Super Mario 3D World, just shows that. Just like, wow, a game with cats. Okay, for a player, this looks zany. I touch it and I'm just blown away. Just like, oh my goodness. Like, how? And why did I miss this? At Ubisoft, I used to hold them to a higher standard because playing Prince of Persia was so good. Playing the rapid games are so good. Getting to some of the Just Dance games, really good. Far Cry 3. It was a great game. I really did enjoy it. But it's just like, I feel like now they're in a position where, you know, they can't show trailers no more because of the games that they released last year. And the kind of the way that a lot of people see Ubisoft is that the way that you kind of treat people of a particular system just doesn't feel right. Not saying people who are just PC, Sony, Microsoft, and Wii U owners and stuff get that treatment, but it just feel like they put their baskets in a particular game for a particular system and hope that they release that this system sells more, where they be like a system that they won't support, like Wii U, it feels like they could delay and not care because they know that it's gonna do low, which it kind of feels just like you made expectations for a system, just thrown whatever and see if people was going to accept that. Where the systems that you expect the games to sell, it doesn't do much. And it's just like, you know, if you treat one system bad and try to treat the others good, and the ones that you treat good, that's more of a letdown. Now people have come to the realization that, you know, we hold you at a higher standard. Now we at a point that we don't expect you to even release good games. Cause you can announce the games for this system, but you're not going to treat that system any good than you will with this particular system that you're not supporting. And it's kind of weird, you know, that it has gotten to that where we could look at Rocksteady, and be like the Batman games because of what Batman's Origins, what they did with that. You just be like, okay, whoever made Batman Origins, you guys cannot make another game. Make your own and design something original fresh, and maybe we'll like you. This Batman franchise that we have grown to love and play, the first two games, give it back to Rocksteady. And then Rocksteady shows off whatever they show, and people are excited again. Because of the first Batman, Arkham Asylum, being released from Rocksteady, it made superhero games, you know, be like, you guys gotta reach to that kind of level of quality. And now we hold Rocksteady at a higher standard to release great games. And that's what, you know, we're Batman, Arkham Asylum, and Arkham City. sorry about that. You can see that. You can actually see that, you know, quality come out from them. Now, I'm not saying there's companies that now release games that looks impressive in trailer need to deliver on gameplay. It's got to a point where the way that we know that we could trust you and believe you is that if you release gameplay, literal gameplay, don't make your trailer look like gameplay, release actual gameplay. If you look at the Nintendo Direct, that's all gameplay. Yes, it's control gameplay by people who are designing them and who've been playing that particular game in development. But that, you know, they're trying to show the cool aspects of things and give you the good and the bad that, you know, you might like or you might disagree. You know, whatever they show, you won. You know, you're going to be won over. You know, just look at the Fire Emblem trailer that they show in January's Nintendo Direct. Because of Fire Emblem Awakening being such a great title, we hold that title now up to a higher standard. When we seen that trailer, everybody is still blown away. Just be like, okay, we want this. Because of Awakening being at a high standard, we're going to hold that game to that same standard and maybe a little bit more. Because we feel like they're going to blow our minds. Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate is getting Ultimate is getting complete love on the reviews. And people who weren't into Monster Hunter 4 or even the Monster Hunter series are now picking up Monster Hunter 3 on Wii U, some people who got it on 3DS are going back to that world and are now really hyped about Monster Hunter 4. I'm definitely hyped about it. You know, just seeing it and reading the reviews, I'm just like, I really want this game. But I want to play cats as Chun-Li and Mario and stuff like that. Yeah, funny and crazy and weird. But because of it getting such good reviews and seeing it in action, I'm just like, I really cannot wait till this game come out. Definitely when I buy my new 3DS XL sometime. I'm not going to get it right away because it's going to probably be sold out. And plus, I got other stuff that I'm going to play and everything. I'm really expecting, you know, I'm really expecting great things that I'm going to be able to play within that world in Monster Hunter 4. So, before we go, we got one more section. And this one is going to be, some of the first games that I've played, and that I kind of value. And we will be right back with that list. And then we'll be ending the show soon, right after this music break. So many of us started with that one game. It was our introduction to video games. From pinball to now and future tech, there will always will be that first game that will make someone get into video games or see if it's for them. It's not always successful, but when it is, that feeling of fun and challenge enters the mind and your world of fantasy is about to expand. I can say personally that my first game that got me into the world of video games was Super Mario Bros. For the NES. And that game, you know, it's just, it's wonderful to play. I still play it on, my mom's, she has the Wii U, so when I come over the house, I play it and truly enjoy it. We got it on the, also on the Wii stuff. And it's still a fun game that, you know, it got me into video games. It got me to loving just everything about it. And the list that I have for a lot of the, a lot of games, that I value and stuff. Now, and these are not first games or anything like that for some of them. Super Mario World is one of them. I can't admit that. But this list that I have, that I say that it's part of, like, I remember them being my first games getting into before I actually got into those kind of systems. It's going to be, on and off, I'm gonna say on and off, because some of our past few years that I had. This is, like I said, this is a list actually of more, games that I actually value than my first game. Sorry about that. The Atari 2600, Pac-Man, for the NES, like I said, Super Mario Brothers, the Sega Master System, Double Dragon, the Sega Genesis, Streets of Rage 2, the Super NES, was Secret of Mana, TurboGrafx 16, Spirit of the Ninja, PlayStation was Final Fantasy 9, Nintendo 64, Super Mario 64, The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. The reason why I have, both of these missions is because they were a major influence for me. Sega Dreamcast, was Street Fighter 3, Third Strike. PlayStation 2 was Okami. The Xbox was Psychonauts. And GameCube was Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime, I tried the trailer at Sam Goody. And when I got done playing the demo, I should say, not the trailer. When I got done playing the demo of Metroid Prime, I went to the counter and paid the whole game off before it was even released. You know, they was taking pre-orders and things like that, but I was just like, I paid the whole game off, kept my receipt until the game came out. And then I went and brought it. Okami, beautiful game. It's everybody say it's the PlayStation 2's Legend of Zelda. The art style kind of just changed my world. The comedy, the storyline, the characters, everything worked so well. It was jaw-dropping to see an art style like this being done on the PlayStation 2. And even I have it on PlayStation 3, the HD, Okami HD, still looks beautiful, still looks jaw-dropping gorgeous. Psychonauts was a really big game for the Xbox. I did have that system, but not too many games. I did have a lot of games because if that version was cheaper, I would get that. Psychonauts was one of my first 10 Schaefer games that I ever played. Enjoyed everything about it. Just a perfect game. Street Fighter Third Strike for the Dreamcast. I value that game because it actually taught me how to play Street Fighter 3. And that experience that I got from that game, I was able to take to the arcade and play any versions of it and just dominate and just have fun, whether I won or lost. Super Mario 64 and The Legend of Zelda or Ocarina of Time, they're just games that's just ultimate classics when you play them. It got 3D space right. It got, it just had dungeons and level design that was just amazing. That I'm just still as a kid that I'm just like, I love this. And I feel like nothing can top these games. Final Fantasy IX, I love Vivi and all the characters. Spirit of the Ninja was one of my first games that I brought myself for my TurboGrafx-16. Secret of Mana, my friend, he let me borrow it. It made me have more friends and things like that, talking about the game. Situation 2, I did a show about that. Great challenge, great music, great gameplay. Double Dragon, I beat the NES version so many times, but you know, the Master System version almost felt like the arcade, and I still enjoy that game. I love it. Like I said, Super Mario Bros. 3, that got me into video games. And Pac-Man for Atari 2600, even though the Atari 2600 was for the whole family, that helped me get into the Pac-Man franchise. So before I go, I'm going to thank everybody for listening. You guys, if you have any games that you value and things like that, you can email me at myop2comment@yahoo.com. That's NYOP, the number 2, COMMENT @yahoo.com. You guys can friend me on Twitter at That Retro Code, THATRETROCODE. You can follow me there on Twitter. You guys can friend me on Facebook under Edward Varnell. I would like to hear your guys' opinions on games that you value and that you love. Even though the site is down at the moment, do check out the Anomalous Radio Network. Some of our podcasts are on Podbean. Just look up the AnomalousRadioNetwork.com or just Anomalous Radio Network, and you can find the Critical Hit Anomalous and some of the optional opinions. I am doing SoundCloud, so I will be posting future episodes on SoundCloud, like this episode is going on SoundCloud when I load it up. So, you know, I can't wait to do more of that. So, the shows, once things get settled, will be going back to being live Mondays and Wednesdays at 10:00 p.m. Mondays are the mini episodes, and then Wednesdays are the main episodes. Even though I know this one is a long one, I combine both of them, like a mini-sode and a regular episode together. So I just made it one whole episode. But thank you guys for... Ooh, sorry about that. Thank you guys for tuning in. Like I said, myop2comment@yahoo.com for your email questions or opinions, and follow me on Twitter at @ThatRetroCode. So before I go out, this song that I'm playing is called "It's Me, It's You." It's You, It's Me by Cascada, K-A-S-C-A-D-E. And I heard this song actually on YouTube from a dance group, and I could never, no one could never answer me what that mix was. So thank God for SoundHound. I cut the music up and I tried it and I listened, let it listen and catch it, and it gave me who the artist was. I'm just going to play this song. Thank you guys once again for tuning in. Hope to see you guys soon. Hope you guys could turn in to the NominousRadioNetwork.net and hear the show live. And if you end up missing these shows live on Mondays and Wednesdays, there's always going to be Podbean when we get that running again. And it's going to be on SoundCloud for you guys to give it a listen. All right. And I am out. And I'm going to play this track for you guys. All right. Peace.
Catch up with us, and you still be here by my side. creeping up on us. You gotta take it day by day. You never know who's waiting for.